Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Welcome, everybody. Dr. Homebrew. We have a good show for you today, as usual, because it is the cider show. I love cider. Cider is my friend. And unfortunately, I don't have any of it to drink today because I'm a bad friend. But we have Pavel here from Club Doze to help us judge this cider from Nate. We have Nate here as well. Pavel is a cider judge, which is kind of cool. So out the second half of the show, we're going to be talking a little bit about the cider program, the exam, and how to study for that, and kind of what all that entails. And we'll do that, after we make fun of Nate and his peach apple cider. Now, we're not really going to make fun of anybody. If we're going to make fun of anybody, it's going to be Brian Schaar. And that's really just kind of facts. No cap. Yeah. Make fun of Brian Schaar constantly. Agenda number 1, 2, and 5. But before we do all of that, Five Star Chemicals is your friend. Just like I'm a friend to cider, you should be a friend to Five Star Chemicals. They have the best cleaning and sanitizing equipment out there. PBW, Star Sand. Actually, I used PBW, and this is sort of, you know, the shtick that we go through every time because I don't homebrew anymore, but I still buy PBW. I used it to clean my the inside of the oven glass on my oven the other day.
Oh, wow. How'd that work?
It worked really well. I made a paste,
nice.
Put it on, let it sit, ooh, and I took a dough scraper and like scraped off the mung, and it was it looks really, really good now. I'm actually really impressed with myself. So PBW, man, don't ever count it out because it doesn't count you out, so you shouldn't
count
it out.
Not just for brewing anymore, yeah.
It really isn't. It really isn't. All right, Nate, welcome, dude.
Thanks, fellas. Happy holidays, and thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
happy
for
New
sure.
New Year, yeah.
Yeah, season's greetings and all of that. All of that fun stuff. So, you sent us a cider, a peach apple cider. Now, I'm going to guess that this is not your first cider.
No, it's not my first cider. I do one or two a year, maybe. Okay. So, it's the first time I've added peaches to one, though.
Because I feel like, yeah, doing the blend is sort of an advanced move. You know, it's like buying your girlfriend the Kama Sutra. You're like, I'm ready to move to the next level. This is the Kama Sutra of making ciders at home, I feel like.
I won't elaborate on that. I'll leave that to you guys to elaborate on that comment.
Yeah, I mean, an 80s power move is what it is.
Yeah, it really is. Look, I just watched Scrooge the other day, so that scene kind of stuck with me. Anyway, so peach apple cider, and this is the first time you've added peaches to your cider. Well, I guess we'll talk about how you did it after we go through the cider.
Sounds good.
I'm disappointed that I don't have it because, I really do love ciders. But let's go Brian Cooper. Why don't you go ahead and start? And then the way we're going to do it is Cooper, Schaar, you guys will go. And then Pavel will jump in and give his thoughts and sort of like, you know, we can work on maybe even some flavor vocabularies because I'm imagining they're similar but maybe different. I don't know. We'll do all that kind of fun stuff. So Cooper, go ahead and launch us into cider.
Yeah.
Club cider, brother.
He'll straighten us out. Okay, so yeah, I judge this as it's a C2B cider with other fruit, and we didn't have it on the label. I kind of judged it before I knew what it was going to be declared as, but it's declared as petulant and with medium sweetness. So you can go from dry to semi-dry to semi-sweet to sweet, or this one should be medium, and you can anywhere on the carbonation scale. So, and you should, I think as just an initial point on this, it would be nice for anyone judging the cider to have that information. And I believe it's actually required if you're going to enter a competition. So, otherwise, just peach as the declared fruit. Had a nice light hiss when I opened the bottle and just a little touch, but and the fill level was good and everything. Getting into the appearance, I get right into the nose and I start writing because I'm used to judging beer, I start writing aroma comments in the appearance section because the sheets all screwed around. This messes me up, I don't know, but it's fine. So appearance wise it's a yellowy light gold color, has some pinpoint bubbles rising through the body of the cider, brilliant clarity, there's no no head to speak of. Not that a cider would usually have much of that, but I'm just used to commenting on the head. So, yeah, I've judged beer a lot more often than I judge cider. But it was fun to judge this one. So, yeah, there's some larger bubbles rising occasionally through. It's definitely not still. So petulant seems right here, and that's good. Aroma-wise, it's a clean, medium-low peach aroma comes through first, and a faint apple behind that. So in the nose, and I didn't know when I was sampling this what the declared sweetness level was going to be, but it wasn't hinting at very much sweetness in the nose. Maybe a semi-sweet kind of a hint of something in there, but it seemed like it would be dryish to me. The peach character is really fresh and not artificial seeming. The fermentation notes are clean. It is somewhat estuary. But yeah, so seems like well fermented. There's nothing bad sticking out here. Flavor-wise, what I notice at the front is that it has a fairly bright acidity, which plays off the otherwise pleasant peach, and there's definitely a little semi-sweet or to sweet kind of sugariness in there that's playing off the peach. It seemed almost a little, it made the peach that was like really natural and fresh smelling in the aroma come across as a little bit more candy-like. It wasn't, I wouldn't say it's not artificial, it's not going towards that direction, but it's coming across as kind of candy-like, which is actually kind of pretty pleasant than it otherwise would be. But you know, the alcohol is clean, seems moderate in here, and that's not really strong. There's not much to speak of in the way of tannins here. Pretty faint, medium light bodied. I would say it is barely, it's petulant, but it's on the kind of low end of petulant here for the carbonation level. And to me, it finishes like not sweet, but not medium sweet necessarily. It seems kind of semi-sweet to me, but still, you know, it gives you some hints of a fruity sweetness in there with that peach, which is still nice. And it's a pleasant drinking cider. The apple is maybe a little covered up by the peach and the other things that are going on there, but it's very clean. So just overall, yeah, it's a clean and pleasant, easy drinking cider with no obvious faults at all. Balance wise, I think it could improve from slightly lower acidity in the flavor and perhaps a touch more tannin or something or maybe a little more carbonation. So give it a little counterpoint and kind of accent the fruit and the sweetness that is there and make it a little more natural and just make it more interesting to me, some complexity. But if the peach was like what it is in the aroma to me, that's really pleasant in the aroma. If it was like that in the flavor, this would be, you know, mid to upper 40s. But yeah, this is very clean, and it's a nice job as it is. It's hard to get that fresh of a fruit flavor in there and have it play as nicely with the cider as it is. I landed at a 39 on this cider, and yeah, it's a nice job. Just, it seems a little bit drier than declared to me, but that's okay. And yeah, with the fresh fruit that's there in the nose, that's a really good start to it, and it delivered in the flavor as well in many ways. So thank you.
Awesome.
Excellent. All right, Brian Schar.
Right, Nate, thanks for sharing this. I know you've been on the show before, but for people that may not have just listened to that past episode, are you in a homebrew club?
I am, yep. I belong to the Rapid River Mash Masters here in central Wisconsin.
Very nice. And I thank you for sharing this with us. You know, Brian and I may be, you know, grandmaster beer judges, but it's always kind of humbling for me anyway to try to judge mead or cider, because I just don't have the background or information so much about those beverages. About 15 years ago, I was doing a county fair, which county shall remain nameless here in the Bay Area. And we had a lot of judges didn't show up. So I had to do like 3 flights and a mead that day. And I only had like 4 meads. And every score sheet I wrote, I was so wrong. The guy that I was judging with was a real mead judge. And this is a 45. This is an 18. And literally each time I crumpled up my score sheet, threw it at the garbage. Like, tell me what I should be tasting here. Cider, I feel like I have a little more familiarity, but no, seriously, just the fact that you might be skilled in one beverage doesn't mean you know anything about other beverages. So that's it's a little humbling to try to judge something you're not familiar with. I really like this a lot. I echo largely what Brian said. I'm not going to repeat too much of this. I will pat myself on the back because I got the medium sweetness and the pétillant carbonation on my own before Brian texted that to me. So I feel good about that anyway. You know, peach is kind of a medium high level. It's the largest aroma component, but it's not dominant. It doesn't overwhelm the apple, I don't believe. But it's definitely there, and it's really pleasant how it melds with the apple. No off aromas. I gave it 7 out of 10 for aroma, 6 out of 6 for appearance. It's light gold. It's crystal clear. You know, that pétillant carbonation, nothing to deduct from there. It's 6 there. Flavor, the medium sweetness, no off flavors. The peach and the apple are in kind of the same ratio as they were in the aroma. The peach is, there's more of it, but it's not dominant in the sense that it overwhelms the apple. I got kind of a low level of acidity, no warming, low body, 17 out of 24. Now, overall impression, I gave it a 7 for a total score of 37. I don't know a lot about cider, but I know I like this. It's drinkable and it's tasty. There's no obvious off flavors to me. Maybe a little more acidity, just as a matter of personal preference, might be nice. But overall, I thought it was a great job, and I thank you for sharing.
Okay, so I told him it was more highly acidic, and you say it's less acidic.
Well,
so now we need Pavel to.
I said I largely echo what you said.
Yeah, no, please don't echo everything I said because I'm talking out of my ass half the time. So
nice.
Well, I'm interested to hear what Pavel says about it.
Yep. Yeah. Brian, what was the score?
39.
The Brian Char.
Oh, other
Brian.
I gave it a 37.
Okay. All right. So. It's a cider. We're going to start with the appearance first. So to me, it was almost brilliant clear. Maybe something was missing. But again, like it's not to reduce the points. So just like observation, it's a petulant. The bubbles kind of forming big ones on the side and occasionally rising up. Small bubbles. Yeah, I just said that. Yellow, and I called it yellow. So 6 out of 6, no issues. There, wait, by the way. Bouquet and aroma. Gentle apricot notes with hint of perfume. And like when I say perfume, it's not like a bad thing, by the way. It's just a natural flavor like or characteristics of apricot, which like, sometimes comes like perfumey. Not perfumey at all. Okay for the apricot. Touch of the sulfites. I got like a slight touch of the sulfites, which is again like not really a problem for a cider in general. The rule of thumb is like if you sense something and it's kind of adds the character because again like the guidelines for cider are like they're like this small like for beer like you go to some styles and they're huge and they cover everything.
Yeah,
for ciders it's like the rule of thumb is like if you like it it's good, if it adds the character it's good, like except for a few noticeable off flavors. Just a bit on the end, like that's where it came. Then the show shows hints of bitterness, like even in the aroma, I could smell that it's like slightly bitter. Butterness, like but more like a Chardonnay way. Like again, like it's not a bad thing; it's a good thing. It's like showing characteristics of the white wine. It adds up to the character. No off flavors or anything that overtly sticks out. So, the fruit wise was like apricot and the apple. Mostly apricots, and I also could smell that it's like acidic. So I gave it 8 out of 10. Flavor, that's where it was more interesting, I think. I called it medium acidity with medium sweetness. It's all subjective. That's because like that's where you guys kind of like different, and it comes to your palate. Like some people that drink lots of acidic tart ciders, they'll be like, "Oh, this is flat." I need more acid in this one. And vice versa, people that prefer the like Angry Orchard, for example, they'll be like, I need more. I need less acidity. It's like it's just killing my palate. Again, it's nothing wrong with that. It's not bad. It's not good. It's just the way it is. Medium body. The fruit, that's where it was interesting about the fruit itself. It didn't taste like apple and apricot separately. It was more like a, some kind of generic fruit was generically engineered, and there was a crossbreed between the apple and apricot, and like that was the flavor of that fruit. Again, not good, not bad, just the way it is.
Okay.
Medium, low, like low tannins on the back, but they were kind of covered with a slickness, and that's where I probably came from the apricot itself. That's why like was showing more white wine characteristics. Medium low bitterness at the end, like hints of the almond from the like stone fruit show sometimes shows the peaty characteristics of the stone fruit itself. To me, it was very balanced. Carbonation seemed to be slightly higher than petalant on the flavor, like on the mouthfeel itself, because like I could taste, like and feel the bubbles actually on the back of my tongue. But on the appearance, it was, I think it's because of the viscosity of the cider itself. Mm. So it dries out at the end. So the sweet, it seems to be less sweet on the finish. And that's where like the bubbles actually are playing the vital role, and no significant off flavors. Overall impression, like I wrote like a bunch of words, so like in my opinion, like overall, I sent you my scorecard. So for the flavor, I gave 19 out of 24. Overall impression, 8 out of 10. Total score is 41 for me. So overall impression, it's like very balanced and very drinkable. Before we start, I'm not a huge fan of the flavored ciders. I'm more into traditional ciders, although I make occasionally like flavored ciders for festivals and stuff like that. And I am not a huge fan of apricot itself as the fruit, as an adjunct, because it's like it's really hard to handle in certain things, because like it goes like overboard and over the balance, and sometimes over dominates most of the drinks, like whether it's a beer or a mead or a cider. So what I thought that you could actually could improve, maybe using some, and there was mentioned before, tannins would help a lot. And probably in this case, adding like a French toasted oaks, medium toast oak, oak cubes would bring you more, even like a, some toasty characteristics, not just the tannins itself from the oak, but also extra characteristics in general. Maybe increasing amount of apple character, but without actually adding extra juice. So I mean by that, like using different apples. I'm not sure how what you did actually. Like I mean, I'll give you my opinion at the end, but adding like extra apples like, with specific apple characteristics like Macintosh would to would help, like whether it's like actual apples or apple juice or buying apple concentrate online, you can find it actually. If you press your own apples, you can consider macerating them for overnight, the pulps, to release more extra character into the juice when you juice it the next day. Overall, it felt like it was probably made, again, I don't know, made by with a grocery store juice and potentially with the apricot slurry or the pulp. Or these are actual apricots.
Yeah, I used whole peaches in the primary and secondary, and then a little bit of like a peach puree at the finish to back sweeten a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, peach and apricot are essentially the same flavor.
Oh, aroma, peach. My bad. So my bad. Yeah. Yeah, peach.
That's all right.
No, but it's pretty much the same thing. But you can call it one almost.
They're interchangeable. Yeah. I think when you put them in something.
That was embarrassing. I actually did not read this whole thing. For some reason, like it kind of slipped my mind. Yeah, peach. Okay. Yeah. So probably the big one, like you know, the juicy ones, like with that. That's where all this not oriness, but the slickness comes from, and. Based on that, it would be hard to balance out the apple character, but you can add the like let's say buy I don't know 16 ounces of Macintosh apple juice concentrate and add that during the before the fermentation to bring more apple characteristics like a Macintosh characteristic.
Yeah, I like that idea for this cider too. Like giving a little more apple complexity is going to help that shine through because the peach was definitely covering it up a little bit, but still super pleasant.
Yeah, based on that, it's 41 points, but you can easily raise it up to like 45. Yeah. So that's my opinion on this cider and still drinking it.
I feel pretty good, Brian, that we got not far away from Pavel. I didn't know anything about cider other than that I liked it, and I didn't. I got within 7 of Pavel. So
I just looked for balance, and it was very nicely balanced. Yeah. It could use a little fine tuning, but very clean and very nice. I'd love to hear how you made this and what you might have, if you've done it before with this same fruit, what you might have done differently or where you'd like to take it the next time.
Sure. Yeah. I can run through my recipe real quick if that makes sense at this point.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Pavel kind of hit it right on the head there. So I use store-bought juice here. And what I try to do is do some different blends. So I try to grab a different kinds of variety just to, so it's not all sweet or not all like on the honey crisp, but there's different flavors and try to get some of those sour apples in there to give it a little more complexity. But what I'm finding is like every year it seems it's harder to find like bottled cider, even if it's like from a local orchard that's not pasteurized, fine, but it's not stabilized. Everything's got that stabilizer in there, and it's almost impossible then to really ferment that out. So I just try to find some store-bought juices, and I try to do 2 or 3 just to again to blend that so it's not all overly sweet and try to get some tartness in there. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll even cut up some more sour type apples and throw those in there. And I didn't on this batch, and it sounds like maybe that could have helped me out a little bit more by finding some sour or some different type of apples to throw into a primary or a secondary to kind of amp up that flavor a little bit. But for this one, what I basically did is got 4 gallons of the great big 1 gallon jugs from my local grocery store here. It's basically a Kroger brand. So I did that. And then I had a couple of smaller type of juices, the little more cloudy ones. So like the store-bought ones are usually crystal clear. They're pretty clear. And then I try to find something that's got a little more characteristic where it's more like we would say like a fresh pressed cider type where it's cloudy and it's not clear.
Yeah.
So I added that to it.
Yeah.
And then in the primary, I added 4.5 pounds of peaches. So at the time, it was midsummer when I was doing this one, in July. So peaches were on sale. So I grabbed a bunch of peaches. I threw that in the primary. Went to the store again, did that in the secondary, threw a couple pounds in the secondary, just try to amp up that flavor. But it just seems like you lose a lot of fruit, through fermentation, right? Like, ciders, they don't always taste like apples, right? When they get fermented, all kind of like wines don't always taste like grapes, right? It just gives it a different flavor. So I kind of treat this almost like a wine. So I use some potassium metabisulfite and some sorbate to basically, kill the yeast or make them inactive, and then bring back a little bit of apple characteristic with some concentrated apple juice. And I actually found some peach juice, some peach apple juice that I added with this just to try to amp up that flavor. So, maybe that's where that, you said like kind of like a better a common flavor came from. It's probably that store-bought juice. I think you kind of nailed that. I just on that back sweetening just to bring that peach flavor through. And again, this is something I try to make because I should have something sweet on tap. I usually have three kegs on tap and have something hoppy, something red, and something a little more on the sweeter side. So that's kind of what I do, and I try to mix it up. So sometimes I just do a straight cider, and sometimes a lot of times I'll throw the fruit in there. Last couple of times I've been out with you guys and I've done like a fruit beer, I talk about that amaretti, and that's what I did on here. I had the amaretti, the fruit puree, so I added a little bit of that after I knocked those yeast out. So I had a little bit of apple concentrate, a little bit of peach of the amaretti peach, and then some of that juice blend, just again try to bring those flavors back out on the back end there, so it brings those apples and those peaches back where you lose some of that through fermentation sometimes. So
well, I think it's a little annoying that you have a 40 score beer or 40 score cider off of like store-bought juice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think it's a little annoying.
What may I ask what you what it started at gravity wise, what it finished at, and then what you sweetened it up to in the end?
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised you guys didn't pick up any alcohol, and I don't either, but it's a 7.2, so it ferments pretty clean. Wow. So it starts off at 1055, 1056, and it fermented out to just about one, or maybe just a hair under. So I got a 7.2. And then I had a little bit of like that, and I didn't measure. I should have measured the final, but you know, when it goes in a keg, I typically don't measure it after the fermentation. But what I found is what I typically add brings it up to about a 1.004. And that would bring that on the lower side of that medium as far as like how ciders are typically rated. So that's kind of why I rated it on the medium side. So I think it'd typically be around there from my past notes when I had typical volumes to a 5-gallon batch. That's typically what it brings it up to. So my guess is it probably finished around an 04 or maybe an 05, 06, somewhere in that range.
Cool. I guess higher. It's like at like 10-10 probably. Close to 10-10. Yeah. And that's Amarete, actually. That's what Brian Cooper picked up as the candy-like characteristics. So...
Yeah, I was wondering if it was that Amaretti or maybe that apple concentrate, because I basically just take a frozen apple, again, just a cheap store-bought frozen concentrate from an apple, just to bring that apple characteristic. And that's kind of what I had highlighted that, too, that candy, like, maybe was from that apple concentrate or maybe the Amaretti, one of those two. So
God, I hate that. I don't like it. It bothers me. I don't know why. Yeah. Because I think, like, you know, making cider is like this romantic thing of, you know, you getting the apple press and you're getting all the apples and you're discarding the ones that are blemished or whatever, but you're just going to the store and going, yeah, I don't know, I mean, I guess I'll try this shit, and then, you know, here you go.
I'm not pressing 5 gallons of juice, man. I'm sorry, I don't have that kind of time on my hands anymore.
yeah
you gotta back sweeten and do stuff like that, and yeah, it's just part of the process is my understanding.
Yeah.
Well, I liked Pavel's description of the fruit too. That was kind of fun because, you know, it's more peach like than apple like, but it's almost like, yeah, it's like peach apple pie, as if there was a fruit called peach apple.
Yeah, genetically engineered fruit that tastes the same, which I think goes to the at least the blending that you did, Nate, to really sort of dial it all in. There's nothing sticky outy anywhere.
Sure, and the base is primarily all that apple juice, right, with a couple pounds of the raw peaches there. And I'm sure there's some exchange between that apple juice and the peaches through its fermenting, but I like quartered them, and maybe, you know, I think I took the pits out and quartered them for the most part and just threw them in the fermenter, and same thing the secondary, again, just try to bump up that peach flavor and just threw them in there. And then I had a little bit of pectic enzyme in there, too.
I think, though, that what he does is he pays a lot of attention to the balance, and it's not necessarily... you know, the traditional way of doing it, but if you can get to point B from point A with using what you have at your disposal and make it a little easier, hey, that, you know, that works. I hope he'll tweak this one and enter it in some competitions because it's pretty good.
Yeah,
or he could try to do the whole press and make it so crazy.
So it's not easy actually to enter competitions right now because there's not that many happening. Yeah. But there is one coming up in Wisconsin actually.
Oh, nice.
Midwinter brew. Yeah, midwinter homebrew competition in Wisconsin. That is like a big one, a huge one. It's like they have usually about 700 entries. And they said that it's going to happen this year.
Wow.
So Nate really needs to get his cider into that because he's in Wisconsin. I think he'd do well with this.
Sounds like it.
Yes. Yeah. I that's why I'm trying to bring this up because I want to see that competing there. And they have a strong competition for meads and ciders overall.
Oh, nice.
Historically. So it will be interesting to see how this one performs at that competition.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to get that information to him. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, since we lost Nate, let's take a quick break and we'll come back. We'll talk more ciders and cider judging with Pavel and all that kind of fun stuff. So hang on a second. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
Ma'am, I'll need to take your top off for this examination.
Oh, doctor.
Hey, thanks for hanging around, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew, and we are back here with Pavel from Club Doze, but also, more importantly, maybe, I don't know, he's a cider judge. So we're going to chat with Pavel here about cider judging, all that kind of fun stuff, because it's, you know, not necessarily what we talk about a whole lot on the show. Although I would like to. I would like to start opening up to a little bit more. We were saying that on the last show. Give me a wine. I don't care. Let's just try it. Let's try
like if we got more ciders and meads, they're fun to judge, and it pushes me to you know, expand my boundaries as far as a judge, you know, and you know, someday I do want to take the mead exam at least, which I know Pavel has also passed, and so he's got the trifecta, which is cool.
There you go, Pavel. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, man. I appreciate it. How did you, what's your background in cider? Why did you want to start becoming a cider? Because I love cider, but I don't think I could sit and judge it.
Well, it's pretty obvious. I started brewing about 7 years ago, and I started with the extract, and then somebody said that, well, we can make something much easier just with the cider, like take the juice, put the yeast in, and that's it. So that was my first step, like just getting into cider. And then I started to taste more ciders after that. Well, first of all, I kind of liked what happened with my cider, so it was pretty good. And after that, I was just going through different stores in the Bay Area and just picking different bottles of different ciders and not sticking to like same stuff all the time, like you know, the common cider. Some wine stores in the Bay Area actually do have really good selections of French ciders, English ciders. It's just you have to know where to look them for them. So if you go to Safeway, it will be the same common selection of ciders, right? If you go to K&L wines or Bay Grapes wines, for example, they had like an aisle of really cool stuff, like even like for ciders from Chile. There's like one store in San Francisco had a cider from Georgia, the country.
Jeez.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. So that was wow. Like, I'm like, whoa. So again, like you have to look for stuff. And what happens actually is that most of the wine distributors, they also try, they have a book for ciders like from France, from Spain. And when they sell the wine to a store, they also try to stick in a few boxes of ciders, like, and really good ones actually. So that was my routine. Like once, like every 2 months or 3 months, I would just drive around the Bay Area through the stores that I thought were like on my good list.
Nice.
And that's why I just tried every single one. And when you try five ciders in a row, you kind of start developing your personal taste, your personal opinion of certain things. And with time, actually, I got settled mostly on French, English, Spanish, and heritage ciders. Oh, and the ice ciders as well. So those are like a five different varieties that I kind of prefer. That was pretty much it. Like just drinking lots of ciders and trying to figure out, hey, actually this is good, this is bad. That's like people try cider like, oh, I don't like it because it's just fizzy drink and like it's sweet and like not like hoppy beer. Like I'd rather drink hoppy beer. But then you try smoky, like the smoky like phenolic English cider, like the bitter and like scrumpy and like kind of like tears your tongue apart. And you're like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. So that's actually like much different from what I used to drink. And then you start to realize that, you know, different apple varieties, like same thing, like playing like hops and like, you know, you have a Kingston Black, you have a Yarrington Mill, and then you start blending and like that's where like why this one is too acidic and this one is too bitter. And again, it all comes to like if you drink 10 ciders in a row, you will get some understanding of which ones you like and which one you don't.
How does cider travel, do you think? Because like I would be very scared of trying a Georgian cider just because I would look at it and go, wow, that came from a long, long way away. It can't hold up good.
Actually, it does.
Yeah?
Most of the ciders that I age my ciders, like I have boxes that are like 2 years old and I still open the bottles at like 3 years old, 4 years old.
Oh, wow.
I recently had a cider from France, from Etienne Dupont. That was 2012.
Jeez.
So vintage. And it was just, you know, it was obviously aged, but sure. It was not bad. Like, and if cider is stabilized, it can be like stabilized naturally or forcefully. Mm-hmm. It will just stay perfectly. Yeah.
And if they're bottle conditioned, you're not going to have oxidation problems. You know, I suppose with the mass produced ciders, you're not going to want to sit on those where they take all the yeast out and pasteurize it. And you know, I mean, they limit the oxygen, of course, but it's going to probably go downhill faster than something like a really nice cider that's you know, in a 750 or a nice thick 375 ml bottle.
And most of the French ciders are that way, so it's not a problem at all.
Okay. All right. Well, what about cider judging? How did you get started? Well, I guess your love of cider sort of transitioned into figuring out, how to be a cider judge.
So you compete a lot, and when you start winning lots of medals, you kind of develop this ego about that I can do everything and I know everything about ciders. And then you enter to a next competition and you get like a bad scorecard. You're like, come on, seriously? So I got into cider judging the same time when I got into beer judging. Just the program for ciders was opened last year. Yeah. But ciders existed, so somebody had to judge them. And when I became a beer judge, actually, it was interesting because 4 months before that, I became a mead judge. Just the way the exams were scheduled. So they tried to stick the mead judges to ciders as well, to cover on ciders. And by that time, I already had a few medals on the state level. I had a couple medals on the green cap. And they're like, oh, Pavel, you'll be perfect for ciders. Yeah. We want to put you for ciders. I'm like, okay.
You know what you're doing.
On some competitions, I couldn't judge. Yeah. Some competitions, I could not judge them because I had one entry in each category. That's kind of a bummer. There's only two categories, by the way, in ciders. So that kind of sucks.
Yeah. Sort of entered yourself out.
So, yeah, it was more like by habit. But I was also kind of flattered that once in a while I would be called to break a tie. And again, when you drink lots of ciders, you start to see that, some things not bad. And people I don't like it. Well, I don't care that you don't like it. It's, the hop flavor, people like it. People don't like diesel characteristics in IPAs. Well, sorry. It's a hops, and there are lots of people that find it to be really appealing. So same thing, it's too acidic, or it's too bitter. And then there's issue that there are types of ciders that do not fit into any categories, and they're kind of between the traditional and the English cider. And lots of times it's getting misjudged by judges, and that's where I was come on, the guys, let's talk about that. I would talk to people all the time, and so at some point I became very vocal about ciders, and that's where I was trusted more with that, because I had my opinion. I was not afraid to express it.
I can tell. So were you how was the cider exam? I mean, if it only launched, what you said, last year or whatever, how's that?
Yeah, were you in one of the very first groups the first group?
Yes and no. So the first groups, as you guys remember, started in 2014, I think, and the first trial exam ran in Grand Rapids at NHC. The second one was the next year in San Diego, and the last one actually was ran at Baltimore. So, and then that's where the BGCP decided to take a step back and evaluate those exams. And I was and I came to an XNHC hoping to take the exam, and they're like, we're going to take a step back and rethink this whole program. So again, at that point, I became very vocal at the BGCP level about ciders, and I was actually invited for a trial online exam.
Oh, nice.
So I was one of the first people to take it. And I, again, did not have opinion on the trial exam because I just, when I got a link, I took it right away and I passed it. And I'm like, well, that's it. Thank you. So I'm like, okay. Did not even study for that. So I'm not even sure how to study for the cider exam because, in my opinion, it was I just trying lots of different apples, driving around Northern California to different orchards, buying up to 1,000 pounds of apples once in a while.
Jesus.
I'm sorry. You're just randomly buying 1,000 pounds of apples?
Yes. So
you are the man. Oh my God.
So yeah, it happened a couple of times, and the guys that I was with, they were really unhappy with that. We're gonna press 500 pounds. And I'm like, dude, they have a fucking awesome deal. Okay, can I swear? Can I use?
Yeah, yeah, sure, here? Man.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So yeah, they actually having a nice deal on the apples, and it's a really unique varieties. I could not pass by the English varieties, like, because you will not find them anywhere in the Bay Area beside this place, and also a bunch of interesting crab apples. It's like if you guys decide to drive to Washington and buy like some kind of unique hop, I don't know, Azaka or something, and like you get the fresh ones, and you are the first one in the Bay Area to have the, and I know a couple of breweries did that, and you guys probably know that too, and like they were the first ones to get that hop that year, and then the fire started, so the rest of the crops were just damaged. So okay, like, and right. Now you like. Who's laughing now? All right. So yeah, the same thing. We got lots of apples at the 2 years ago, and people were not really happy. But again, like we did the whole club cider pressing, and everybody got like 5 gallons.
So you're pretty dedicated, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So I want to go. I want to go back a little bit, even as I'm just was blew my mind that you're just randomly buying 1,000 pounds of apples, and that's just pretty awesome.
It wasn't like random.
Well, I don't mean random. I mean when you have an opportunity to get something unique and cool.
Yeah.
Of course,
I didn't buy it. But I want to go back a little bit. It sounds like the cider exam has the same type of thing like the BJCP beer exam. Where there's like an online component to start. Is that correct? Am I understanding that right? Okay. So I could pretty much just go to the BJCP site, pay my $5, $10, whatever, and then just take the online exam. And then you get like, just like with the beer side, you get like some sort of status from that. And then you have to go do some other things.
Right. It's pass fail, right? And you get a provisional.
Also, you pass the online exam first, and then you have to pass the tasting exam, and that's where it gets actually tricky.
Okay.
You need to find the exam actually somewhere. I hosted one exam last January, and we got like 7 people, I think, or 8 people going through the program and passing the exam. And then I was supposed to have another exam this December, December 20th, 21st, I think, whatever the weekend is. And unfortunately, due to the COVID-19, I had to cancel the exam. That kind of sucked because like, if we would still do the exam, it has to be outside. And I was not sure if I can get actually 6 people to sign up because I only had 2 people at that point signed up. And it's not going to be raining. So... Fortunately, it rained and I canceled in advance, but it was kind of like hard for me to do that, but I kind of had to. So from my understanding, the next exam will be, so I talked to David Tackham, and you guys probably know him. He's the highest ranking BGCP judge on the entire West Coast. So,
I didn't know that. Tackham is such a nice guy. He's so great.
He's great.
I think he just made Grandmaster 7 or something. He's wow. Out there.
Slow him down, man.
So he was 6. He's number 7 now. James 7. So nice. he will be taking over the cider exam because historically he would run the beer exams and the meat exams. I spoke with him this year, and he wants to take over the cider exam. I'm okay with that, but he wants to give up the mid exam, so our club would take over the mid exam. And again, like I'm cool with that as well. So whenever he can schedule his cider exam, that will be the next one. So it's either going to be, I'm not sure if he was able to do it for this year, but he usually does those special exams in March. Mm. So either 2022. Okay. So
that's cool.
But again, like I'm not expecting any like many competitions in the meantime. Anyway, I'm not a pessimist. I'm just a realist.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, I mean, and that's very clear too. When you're talking about like, oh, this flavor is here, and it's not good or bad. It just exists, and this is the thing. And that's what I think a lot of judging needs to be. You know, I think sometimes judges, myself specifically, put way too much weight on a certain thing and go, oh, well, this must mean a thing or whatever. It's like, nope, this flavor just is here, and it doesn't mean this is good or doesn't mean this is bad. It is here. And is it to style or not? And that's sort of like I don't know, focal thinking and judging is sort of what it's all about. And we've all gotten bad judging sheets back, you know, from competitions where it's like, well, there's too much emotional weight on whether or not this is too roasty. It's just like, I don't care. Is it to style or not? That's all I want to know.
It's too roasty,
yeah.
JP.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, they are. But yeah, definitely the point that the cider judging exams are fewer and farther between. You do have to kind of plan to become a cider judge and do it. I see there's four on the schedule now. There's one in Chicago. There's one coming up in Israel. And then
Let's go to that one.
And and David Techum does have one scheduled for June of next year in Sacramento. So for those on the West Coast, you may have to travel to take a cider exam if you're interested in it. This is your chance to do it if you're on the West Coast or nearby here.
Hopefully we can
states nearby.
Hopefully that can happen. Jeez.
Yeah. I almost went to Israel to a proctor exam.
Oh, geez. Nice.
Wow. That'd be super cool.
They were considering to bring some folks from the United States to proctor, and they were paying some expenses. I was like, that was supposed to be, I think in September, but they moved it. There were talks about like me going there, and thank you, COVID, it didn't happen.
Hopefully you can go when everything opens up, man. Yeah. That's a hell of a trip. Yeah. That's cool.
It'll happen again.
Yeah, it's cool, man. This whole little beer world lets us, you know, sort of do weird
but
shit.
I'm happy that I'm translating exams from foreign languages. I'm still working, helping BGCP in other ways. Still getting my points towards the GM endorsement.
Nice.
That's cool. It was kind of interesting that you guys caught my comment on that some flavor was there, like let's say Chardonnay buttery characteristics, right?
Yeah.
And Mike Wilcox published a really remarkable study guide for the exam, actually for the online exam, that actually covers every single all flavor. And again, like the rule of thumb, if it's kind of complimenting, because every single thing that appears in a cider, it's like it's either by it's a fermentation and the fruit itself, you almost have no control over that unless if you like just stick to the same blend of yeast and like low temperature. But overall, traditionally the way it's done, like it may have lots of things, and it's like if it's a part of the character, if it actually makes it more interesting, and actually you want it to be more interesting, like right, it's like I don't want to try the same cider all the time. So, and again, like if it's an apple-y, I don't want it to be apple-y. Apple is fermented apple is still apple. Like comparing to the wine, white wine, You try Pinot Grigio, for example, and it's like lots of different flavors. So you get like some type of gooseberries, maybe like some peach and apricot, like hints of kiwi. But overall, it's like crisp, tart, and does not taste like grapes at all. Like, so when it comes to like ciders, that's where like one of the reasons why I became like so passionate about it, because like the judges would be asking for more apple character, and I'm like, if you ferment out the all sugar from the cider, you get like mostly the malic acid, and the malic acid is actually the apple, the malic, the word malic, malus, it actually in Latin means apple, so that's your apple character.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I did not know that.
So like when we started to judge the cider, that was why I think like if I would not get apple character, but that would still be coming more acidic with the emphasis on the malic acid, that would be still enough for me to pass it as the apple cider with other fruit.
Yeah.
So the guidelines state that would be the same beverage if you remove the apple juice and use like water or just apricot or peach juice. So definitely an amount of malic acid like tells you that no, it would not be the same. So right. that was a thing that kind of like forced me to go like really hard in the judging program for ciders and try to be the advocate for just like just for cider in general. So,
yeah, just make it better. You just gotta adjust a little bit. Yeah, I dig that. That's cool. I think we need to take another break, Cooper, right?
Yeah, I Producer think we Cooper? Have to. It's union rules.
That's true. Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, everybody. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Homebrew, I think. I don't even know anymore. Hold on. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Kings.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Thanks for sticking around, everybody. Dr. Homebrew, we're winding up the cider show. We're sitting chatting ciders with Pavel. And Pavel, I wanted to ask you real fast, what's the number? Give me two pieces of feedback or suggestions to people who want to make cider at home. How can they make the? What are the two most important things to focus on when you're making cider at home?
Desire.
Okay. All right. Yep.
So you want to make cider. So you make cider for a reason. Mm-hmm. And probably what would be the other thing? I mean, you try it once and you're like, I didn't like it. It was bad. I would never make a cider again. Like, well, try it again. And try to make something that you would be recreating something. I mean, obviously, if you live in an area where you cannot get the fresh juice, well, we consider that because you always can find a way to get the juice. Like if you're a club, if you're a member of a club, try to find like another five guys in your club and go to orchards.
Yeah.
And if you don't get apples, like if you don't have a means to press 1,000 pounds of apples, try to strike a deal with the orchard and get the juice from them. They will always go and cooperate with you. So like, if you want unpasteurized juice, they'll be like, sure, we'll do that for you. And for example, our club did this year. We went to orchard and we had a choice between the pasteurized and unpasteurized. And so we got both actually. And like, we picked the apples ourselves right there on the orchard. And then,
wow.
Like, yeah. So
that's cool.
You want to make it. Like, that's probably the biggest thing. Like, you want to make it. And, Google is your friend for the rest of it.
Not to lead you in a direction, but one of the other things that you were commenting on for Nathan's cider was just the blending, and that's such an important part of it. And you know, there's from Macintosh to Mutsu to just different varieties of apples. The apples that you eat are not necessarily the best apples for making ciders, right. And you want to get some elements of something more complex with something smooth and drinkable to get something that's going to have enough character to give a good score, right? I mean,
yeah. And again, like if you live like somewhere that does not have any apples, so it should not be excused, actually. There is always a way to find they grow apples. I mean, yeah, it's not gonna be the same. Maybe terroir would be different. Like, for example, Coif in San Diego does the cider press once a year as well. And the thing is that for them, they get a high acid, high sugar content on the apples. So when they press and they ferment, it turns out to be like 10 and 11% alcohol, which is really high.
Too much for me, man.
But for me, actually, I find it to be interesting. It's a regional characteristics of the cider. Why not? Like, if you declare it that way, and I'll be looking forward. So for me, as a judge, actually, it will actually raise the points. Like I'll be judging accordingly. So like, if somebody submits the highly alcoholic cider, okay, it's bad. But they're like, well, it's from a southern region. That's what all we have. I'm like, well, okay, that's your original style. You have to, need to like educate yourself and try. Like, if you find a cider that you like, make it. If you don't like ciders, then well,
don't make it.
It's okay. It's fine.
Sounds good to me.
It's been really fun talking to you about Nate's cider, and you know, in the past you've brought bottles down from Canada when we were in Rhode Island tasting, you know, just a big bottle share and tasting around and sitting around and talking about, you know, beer, cider, or mead with people who are as knowledgeable as you are about them is a really fun thing. So thank you again for sharing your knowledge with us.
Thanks for joining us, Pavel. Appreciate it. And thanks to Nate.
Thanks a lot, Pavel.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks to Nate for sending us your last six bottles of cider, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. All right, this has been Dr. Homebrew, everybody. We're going to get out of here. If you want to be on the show, you email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. And again, we're taking beer, we're taking cider, we're taking mead, we're taking Braggot, we'll take a gruit. I don't even want to take a wine. I don't care. I think it'll be fun. And as long as you understand that we're not wine judges, and we're going to stumble along with you, but I think that'll be, you know, that'll be also pretty fun too. So anyway, email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. We're looking for people. So,
we're looking for a few good packaged beverages and some bad ones too.
There you go. all right. Happy New Year, everybody. Stay safe, protect yourself, protect each other. And, you know, we'll get through 2021, just fine. All right. See you later, everybody. Thanks.
2020 Cheers. Out.